I will promise you this, that if we have not gotten our troops out by the time I am president, it is the first thing I will do. I will get our troops home. We will bring an end to this war. You can take that to the bank.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and Rational Radio 1360 AM, Dallas, Texas. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today we have another wonderful show. They just keep getting better every week, and we're getting ready to celebrate our 1 year on the air. We've really had to go through a lot to keep the show on the air. But today we're going to be speaking to Ralph Nader. We're going to be talking about materialism, consumerism, marketing. Not only do we market products, but we market candidates as products. And Ralph and I will be talking about that. And we'll also be talking about his new work. It's a fictional book called Only the Super Rich Can Save Us. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with my guest, Ralph Nader.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. My guest today is consumer advocate and perennial presidential principled presidential candidate, Ralph Nader. Ralph really needs no introduction. A lot of people say that about me, but this is really true about Ralph, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing that, except for I'm going to read a quote by Warren Beatty. Since the progressive era, Ralph Nader has done more than anyone else to protect American consumers. With this utopian fantasy, his book, he shows us how good he thinks things could be. Ralph, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. We're very honored to have you on today.
Thank you very much, Cindy.
And we're making a special soapbox. We're airing it on Friday. Usually we start Sunday at 2, put it up at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. But Friday is Black Friday. It's, you know, the consumer orgy of the year. So we wanted to have you on as, you know, one of the probably the most famous consumer advocate in history, I think, world history, because we didn't really have consumer advocates till recently. Before we talk about your book, Only the Super Rich Can Save Us, let's talk about that. What keeps Americans like bought in and literally insane over materialism, over consumerism?
Well, it's basically the great distraction. If you look at people who are trying to get through every day and they don't have much money, and then you see the dazzling marketing spectacles of shopping malls, and the corporations in the U.S. Have never been surpassed in terms of their marketing appeal, their right. use of all kinds of aesthetics, from the packaging to the way the stores are laid out. And, you know, for people who have little else in life, it's almost a theater that they go to. We're talking about the shopping malls or the big stores. And when justice is rationed, products come to the forefront. There aren't many people in town meetings. There aren't many people who are engaged in political activity. There aren't many people in the public square because they've been taught from kindergarten that they don't matter. They can't fight City Hall and just try to live as comfortably as possible. And as Mr. Bush told people after after 9/11, shut up and shop.
Just go shopping, right? Yeah, go shopping, so, travel, and then everything's going to be hunky-dory.
So when all the other doors are closed to people, and that means access to the media, they're turned into spectators for professional sports and stadiums that their taxes fund, while libraries and clinics and other public facilities decay for lack of repair money. That's the only outlet. And the kids, of course, love it because it's exciting. They don't know better. And they get all these ads from these corporations because marketing direct to kids is a multi-billion-dollar business. And it happens to undermine parental authority. And they get to these kids at age 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And that's their message. The message is buy junk food and watch violent programming, which they call exciting,
right,
and nag your parents.
Right.
They're very, very good about getting these kids to nag their parents.
And it's unfortunate. It's almost become a tradition, a holiday tradition, for the Friday after Thanksgiving, that at least one person is going to be trampled at a Walmart trying to rush to get, you know, a $50 TV or something like that.
Yeah, well, Walmart had a very bad experience last year, as you know, and they're taking severe precautions. But, you know, the way they market it, you know, first come, first get the big saving, and people just, you know, rush, and somebody falls, and somebody screams or shouts, and you get a trampling situation. It doesn't look good for these big corporations, so I think they're going to be very careful in the future.
Well, yet the consumers still participate in these tragic events. But talking about marketing, now you have run for president on a principled platform, very principled stand and campaigns. But it seems just like what you're talking about, that presidential elections or even congressional elections aren't so much more about issues or true debate. It's mostly about marketing a candidate, isn't it?
Yeah, it's trivia. Marketing a candidate, the appearance, the politically correct words, the studied evasion of the big issues. Everything is choreographed. They get the right audiences in the town meetings. Raise a lot of money from commercial interests that want something obviously in return. And they have their website, and that makes them appear like they're Democratic and they're getting small contributions. But the big boys in Wall Street and in the executive suites, they still have their hooks in both parties. And it's become a two-party tyranny because they don't tolerate the competition from third parties or independent candidates. So we're really at the most decayed state of our so-called democracy when people have absolutely no say as to whether there are going to be trillions of their tax dollars being used to bail out Wall Street crooks and speculators, often without even Congress being involved. Just weekend deals with Citigroup and the Treasury Secretary, who at that time hailed from Goldman Sachs, the Federal Reserve Chair, Bernanke. Just imagine, over a weekend, Robert Rubin, who helped deregulate the banking industry when he was with Clinton as Secretary of Treasury, and then became one of the honchos at Citigroup, made $40 million in 4 months' work, actually, of consulting when
he
left the Treasury.
Right.
He tanked Citigroup, and just before it goes over the cliff, he goes down, huddles on a weekend. Monday morning, a press release comes out of the Treasury and Federal Reserve, $360 billion taxpayer guarantee for Citigroup's bad paper and $45 billion investment in their preferred stock. The Congress didn't even have a role in that. So it's getting so it's the corporate state right. in the executive branch behind closed doors, and they say the taxpayers stuff it. Well, I guess one of these days taxpayer will throw down the gauntlet the way you did outside of George Bush's ranch, and maybe some movement will start. There's always a time when the American people, having been subjected to so much injustice, says enough is enough, but we're still waiting.
Well, it's hard because of what we've been talking about, the marketing aspect. Now, here we talk about people in the working class or even in the poor classes thinking, which is the working class now, thinking that, you know, they can be dazzled by marketing for McDonald's or Walmart or whatever else. But we have some very smart mutual friends who were dazzled by the marketing of the Obama campaign. So, you know, they can't, like, cut through the layers of deception and really see what the U.S. is all about. Now, Obama's getting ready to announce that they're going to send 34,000 more troops to Afghanistan, where people in the anti-war movement are saying no surge, but he already sent 40,000 troops and contractors at the beginning of this year. We're saying no surge. There's going to be a surge. Ralph, what do you think we should do?
Well, that's first of all, that's a very bad political mistake for him, because he still doesn't realize what this combat Marine captain Matthew Ho
right.
Stated in his resignation letter recently. He was a foreign service officer
right.
in Afghanistan. He said the very occupation of that country with U.S. soldiers and drones and helicopter gunships and F-16s fuels the insurgency. So the only way to deal with Afghanistan is basically to help the tribal chiefs build a better infrastructure for their people, clinics and roads and highways, and they will establish order because they're there. They know everything that's going on. But no, the tribal chiefs who, let's say, are opposed to the insurgency, although it isn't a uniform one, as Mr. Ho said, some of these insurgents are just trying to protect their valley where they live,
right.
called valleyism. Others are dealing with drugs. Others have other ambitions toward Kabul. But when the tribal, and it's a tribal culture, when the tribal chiefs and their associates don't have anything to provide their people with, and the Pashtun tribe itself is 42 million people
right.
straddling Afghanistan and Pakistan, then there's going to be anarchy, and it'll be more soldiers and more deaths of civilians and U.S. soldiers. So it's a very bad quagmire. He got himself into it during the campaign when
exactly.
he basically said he wanted to get out of Iraq. So in order not to appear soft,
mm-hmm.
and this happens to people who've never served in the military, like Clinton, they had to be more macho. And he says, well, Afghanistan's where the fight has to be taken. And it doesn't look good at all. The public's turning against the war. And, of course, now the White House has released this incredible estimate where every soldier in Afghanistan is going to cost the taxpayers $1 million.
$1 million. The surge will cost us up to $54 billion per year.
And the government is broke, and it can't
mm-hmm.
it can't provide for the people back home. So what happens when you get third-party candidates or independent candidates? Even the very progressive groups turn their back.
Well, that's what I was about to say, Ralph. You know, Barack Obama promised he was going to do this. Now, all of a sudden, the organizations who supported him during the campaign are saying, whoa, you can't do this. But he's just incredibly fulfilling a campaign promise.
Well, there's no end to least worst voting
right.
and least worst politics, because there'll always be two parties, one of which is least worst. And the minute you go for the least worst, you don't pull on the least worst in your direction because you're so terrified of the worst.
Right.
Both parties get worse every 4 years. I mean, I remember I when I was campaigning in California, I met some people from Code Pink who came to a gathering.
Right.
And I said, where are you? I mean, who's carrying the agenda of peace and getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan and the U.S. becoming a humanitarian superpower and going after the bloated, wasteful military budget? Who's doing that? And they sort of looked at me like, oh, well, you know, you can't win, so why should we even support you? Well, you know, when someone is hardcore, as Code Pink has that attitude, then there really is no political resurgence possible in the country.
Well,
and you can see it now on single payer.
Right.
The hardcore single payer are falling off now, saying, well, we can't oppose this cockamamie bill that's in the House and Senate by Obama, Pelosi, and Reid, which is just going to swell the profits and the waste of the health insurance and drug and hospital chain industry. And they're dropping off. So it's just, I've never seen a situation like this. It's created because, unlike parliamentary countries, where small parties not only have it easier to get on the ballot, but they can be the swing and form coalitions with the larger parties, like the Green Party in Germany.
Exactly.
That never got more than 8-9% of the vote, but it turned the Social Democratic Party much more toward green politics. But in this country, we have what my campaign director, Teresa Amato, called in her new book, The Grand Delusion. The subtitle is the Myth of Voter Choice in a Two-Party Tyranny. That's what we have to break. It may be broken by a billionaire, you know, in 2012, Bloomberg or someone turning it into a three-way race.
Right.
But that's not the best way to do it.
No, that's still dollar democracy. Well, speaking of that, let's talk about your new book, Only the Super Rich Can Save Us. Tell my listeners about that.
Well, it starts out with, you know, all of us struggle for some sort of justice in our community or our country and world. And when we lose, we think to ourselves, you know, if we only had more media, if we only had more organizers, if we only had more money.
Right.
And this book is dedicated to the proposition that the vast majority of the American people want significant redirections in living wage and health insurance and efficient government. They don't like warmongering. And the reason why they never get their way, even though majority is supposed to rule, is because the money is on the side of the two parties and the corporate masters, paymasters, mm-hmm. and there's no money to really organize at the community level on behalf of the people. So we have this huge mismatch, and, you know, next week, for example, 2,000 lobbyists will once again descend on Congress representing the big drug companies and health insurance companies like Aetna and the hospital chains. And there isn't one full-time lobbyist for single payer, full-time, and that and single payer insurance. The health insurance, that's full Medicare for everybody, free choice of doctor and hospital, much more efficient, much more humane, is supported by a majority of the American people, doctors and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, it's like 1 to 2,000. So this book develops a fictional scenario, which has a lot of realistic possibility in it, where Warren Buffett, the $50 billion man out of Omaha, Nebraska, after an experience of bringing supplies to stranded people after Katrina, goes back to Omaha, and he gets 16 super rich people. These are real people, you know, Max Pilevsky, Bernie Rappaport, Ted Turner, William Gates Sr., Ross Perot, and others.
Is there Yoko?
Yeah,
Yoko
Ono, the peace advocate, Bill Cosby, Phil Donahue. He gets them into a mountaintop hotel in Maui in January 2006. Where they decide that in 1 year of lightning strategy, massive personal investment, over $15 billion they contribute or raise, to awaken the whole country, to hire thousands of organizers, start a clean elections party, start a people's chamber of commerce, buy into a sub-economy where best practice, so they buy their banks, insurance companies, or food companies, or auto dealerships, not just to get intelligence about the counterattack that comes at them in the middle of the year from the big corporations and their political allies, but also to show that sustainable practices are are profitable, and that's the way for our economy to go, with humane treatments of consumers and workers. Well, there's a lot of detail in the book. The detail is designed to have the reader come away saying, by golly, this could really happen if the money was there, because the money produces the organizers, the money produces the morale, the money that finds the skilled people who know how to redirect the country in terms of its engineering or scientific or technical way.
Right.
The money supports the public sentiment of hardworking people who get stuffed every day and are told they can't fight City Hall, and the money gets the mass media, and all this is a dramatic mobilization that Leslie Stahl told me in a letter. She had read the book on her vacation in August of 60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl.
Right.
And she wrote saying she found it engrossing, creative, and funny. And I said, I'll take all three, because
mm-hmm.
that's what's needed
right.
for people to elevate their imagination so they can envision what's really possible in this country. Now, it is true, the whole book deals with domestic issues. It doesn't deal with foreign and military issues, because the 17 decided they were going to take a big enough step building democracy here at home and dealing with issues that confront workers and consumers, patients, investors, and taxpayers. So, but it's a great civics lesson. It's dramatic. Warren Buffett, is the convener. He's the brains in terms of keeping all these potentially fractious super rich people on track. Warren Beatty is in the book running against Schwarzenegger in
uh-huh.
2006.
Right.
That's quite a campaign in the book. And he thinks it would be a good movie. We have a website called onlythesuperrich.org to get your reactions and ideas, because I want this book to be a movement, not just a book. I want it to generate small conferences of enlightened, older super rich who have a background of striving for justice in addition to being very successful multimillionaires or billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
And once they get into their 70s, 80s, and 90s, Cindy, some of these enlightened people have a different perspective.
Well, some
they want to
unenlightened
look at their grandchildren
people. Yeah.
in the eye.
Some unenlightened people also, they start to say, whoa, you know, maybe we better make some recompense for stealing from, you know, the workers or the environment for so long and get into that. Have you heard from Warren Buffett about this?
Yes, I had breakfast with him about 2 months ago in
uh-huh.
Omaha. He was quite, interested in what I had to say, because he said he is trying to get billionaires around the world to commit 50% of their estate to good works.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he just means charity. I think he means justice as well.
Right. Well, unfortunately, some of the people that you mentioned are very tied into the Democratic Party, and they think that giving, you know, lots of money to the Democratic Party is something that's going to make change.
That's right.
Or maybe not make change, but give them access to the
yeah.
politicians. And, you know,
that's what I wanted to disabuse them
right,
of with this
right.
book.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation dialogue in this book also educates them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, after a while, they're going to have to realize that keeping with the Democratic Party without taking a pull on them and changing it is a Nowheresville. It's going to get them nowhere.
Well
a lot
yeah,
of these
exactly.
people in the book, in real life, I mean, they weren't angels. One reason why they're so effective in taking on the giant CEOs who arrayed a huge counterattack against them, led by a Darth Vader-type character, Lancelot Lobo.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons is because they know what the vulnerabilities and vanities and weaknesses of these giant CEO companies, and they use lightning strategies. They told themselves if they took 4 years to do this, they couldn't have done it. They had to do it very fast, because these large corporations don't know how to turn around fast enough when they're confronted with such knowledgeable movement. Saul Price is one of the 17, and he started the Price Club, mm-hmm. which merged with Costco, which pays better wages and benefits than Walmart. And his mission early in 2006 was to organize the workers of Walmart. And that is, if I do say so myself, a spectacular example of what happens when someone who knows, because he founded the big box discount store, mm-hmm. and is willing to put millions of dollars and organize the workers and get the ex-associates mobilized big turnover, leave Walmart, in all kinds of exciting ways, you realize that the missing equation is money. And that's what we have to do. You know, centuries ago, rich people gave to their churches or monasteries. Then 100-some years ago, the secular foundations, Carnegie and Rockefeller, started with philanthropy, mostly charity. And now it has to move into social justice, where they're willing to take on power, where they're willing to deconstruct it, replace it, and that's what this book is directed toward. That third move by enlightened, mostly older super rich, and what a leverage they have because of their knowledge and their money. Just $15 billion can credibly change the entire distribution of power in this country.
Wow, that seems like a really, and it doesn't seem like a lot of money for people like that.
When
we talk about trillions of dollars now is what we're measuring money.
Yeah, less than one-third of Warren Buffett's budget net worth.
Uh-huh. Wow. Let's talk about money a little bit in politics. You said that one of the strategies was to get into clean elections for this group of rich people in your book. But let's talk about that, Ralph. When you know, and people tell me, and when I ran against Pelosi, people tell you that they would like to see us in the government, but we don't have a chance of winning. Now, my campaign raised about $650,000 against Nancy Pelosi, which I thought was a significant amount of money. We spent every single penny of it. She still got almost three times more votes than I did. She raised $2.5 million. She didn't spend very much in the district. Your campaign raised a significant amount of money. Do you think that people like us would have a chance if, say, you raised almost $100 million, if I raised $3 million? Do you think that I could have beaten Pelosi? Do you think that money is what people think gives people a chance to win?
Well, let's put it this way. If money gets you press, if you have a significant money, the press will cover you more than if you don't have money. For example, poor Cynthia McKinney, I don't think the Greens raised $200,000 for her nationwide as their presidential nominee.
Right.
So that's one. The second thing money does, it helps you get on the ballot because you have to fight off the Democrats and litigation, and you have to get a lot of organizers on the street getting signatures for petitions. So that's the second thing money gives you. The third is money gives you time. I mean, if you don't have money, you lose a lot of time trying to climb a steep cliff with slippery rope. And the fourth thing that money doesn't do is break through the two-party mystique, unless you have, you know, Bloomberg or Perot-type money, where you can saturate the TV. If you don't get people thinking that you have a chance to win, they will vote against you even though they believe in you entirely and they oppose the least worst person of the Democrat and Republican alternatives on the ballot.
Right.
So that's what has to be done. But we have to repeal these state laws. We have to get ballot access similar to what they have in Canada or France or Germany or Italy, where it's very easy to get on the ballot. We have 50 state laws, some of which
are
almost impossible,
right,
like Oklahoma and North Carolina, just to get in Texas, just to get
California is very hard, too. It's the fourth hardest state, and spent 4 months just getting me on the ballot as an independent. And you got on the ballot in 45 states, didn't you?
We spent all the time until Labor Day getting on the ballot. So our presidential campaign was an 8-week campaign.
You spend a lot of time and a lot of money getting on the ballot while they're campaigning, while the two-party candidates are campaigning.
Worse. Yeah. Well, they go to national conventions, the Republican-Democrat Party, funded with $17 million each of taxpayer money appropriated by Congress, dominated by the Republican-Democratic Party. And mm-hmm. they go for these hospitality suites with these corporations, wining and dining them. And we're footing the bill for their conventions. It's outrageous. I mean, people have got to become constructively indignant here. They can't simply say, "Ah, oh, things are terrible. Pox on both your houses. I'm going to go back and update my profile on Facebook."
Well, let's. We're running out of time. Are you going to run for president again in 2012, Ralph?
Too early to say. I've done it three times. You know how agonizing difficult it is.
Yes.
But I don't think that the voters should be denied the progressive peace agenda.
Right.
Any 4 years. So someone should do it. And hopefully more than one should do it, because we need more voices knocking on that stone wall until it crumbles and we have a competitive democracy.
Well, I really admire the hell out of you, Ralph, because I know that it's not easy, and I know you get a lot of a lot of hatred directed at you. But I also had some friends ask me to ask you if you would run against Christopher Dodd in Connecticut for Senate.
I'm getting tons of requests from my native state to do that.
Yes, that would be awesome.
It's such a small state, you could actually work it, you know, instead of trying to campaign in 50 states.
Oh, I know.
Right now, I'm an agnostic. I had a talk with Chris Dodd a few days ago about important amendments to the Financial Consumer Regulatory Bill that we have proposed and been proposing for years. Mm-hmm. And we'll see how he reacts.
Oh, good. Well, I'm really looking forward to you, and keep up the good work, Ralph.
And thank you for your heroic work, and as a citizen and as a political candidate, keep going after Nancy Pelosi.
Well, I'm going to be moving to Washington, D.C. We'll be neighbors in March, because we're going to start doing a daily action to put pressure on the government to bring the troops home. And so we're going to take the grassroots direct action approach for 2010 and see where we get with that.
Well, that's good. Well, she spends some time here in Washington, too.
Yeah, well, a little bit. Unfortunately, she spends too much time in D.C. Thank you again, Ralph, for being on the show.
Thank you, Cindy.
Bye-bye.
Thank your listeners.
That was my guest, Ralph Nader. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Stay tuned to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you are listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers, such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims, such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox here at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and Rational Radio 1360 AM, Dallas, Texas. When I interviewed Ralph earlier, we talked a little bit about the Afghanistan troop surge. And we know today as we're pre-taping, that Obama will probably announce next week on Monday or Tuesday, and that's a week after Thanksgiving, that he will send 34,000 more troops to Afghanistan. Ralph enumerated many things that are going to go wrong with this troop surge that have already gone wrong since we invaded Afghanistan 8 years ago now. And sending more troops, surging the violence, will, like Ralph said, only increase more chaos, more deaths, more destruction, and will harm our vets that already are not getting taken care of. Look what happened in Fort Hood a couple weeks ago. An active duty soldier that hasn't even been to the front snapped or whatever happened and killed 13 people and wounded over 30 more because we don't have the resources to take care of our soldiers, to take care of our vets. This troop surge is being done over the will of the American people. I just saw a poll today that said 52% of American people are against the war in Afghanistan, and 49% will not support a troop surge. That's a significant amount of people. That's a significant amount of public opinion being on the side of peace, being on the side of the American people. And Obama is going to go ahead and send more troops anyway. Now, as Ralph said, he said that Obama didn't know these things. I think Obama fully well has people just like Ralph on his staff that can, you know, enumerate the history of what's going on, can enumerate the problems of sending more troops to Afghanistan. The fact that not one empire has ever been successful there, that Afghanistan is proud of being the burial place of empires. So we have to think is, why is Obama doing it anyway? Well, like we said in the interview, the anti-war movement, so-called anti-war movement, has given Obama the space to do this by supporting him when he was running for president. So what can we do? Well, I'm going to do your soapbox action a little bit out of order this week. Your soapbox action this week is, as soon as it is announced or as soon as possible, to make a sign and get out on a street corner where you live and hold the sign up, whatever you want to say, that bring the troops home, we're against a surge, we don't support what's going on. Be creative. I've seen so many creative signs out there. Get on a street corner and just, you know, show your opposition to what this U.S. military empire is about to do. Obama has little control over it. I hope it's political suicide for Obama. I hope the people of America wake up. And I hope you go to peaceoftheaction.org, P-E-A-C-E of theaction.org, and see what myself and many activists are planning in the spring to get our troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Just bring them home now.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
Hi, my name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Our Ask Cindy question today comes from Aaron Pringle in San Marcos, Texas. And Aaron says, Miss Sheehan, while I noted in an article in the UK Guardian that there was to be an anti-war protest in Washington in October involving empty boots, when I Googled to search for articles covering the protests, I found none. In fact, as you probably know, but it's new to me, when I Google anti-war protests, no recent or near recent news articles appear, whereas usually linked headlines are the first to appear on many topics covered. What is going on that war protests is not being covered by the media, or is it, but I'm just not looking in the right places? Well, Aaron, it was extremely hard to break through any media coverage of anti-war protests. You have to realize that the media is owned by a few cartels, and many of those cartels like General Electric that owns NBC actually profit off of war. And if there's only a few cartels, five or six really, a handful or two handfuls of media cartels that own all of the media, not independent media, but all of the corporate media, you know that some of their subsidiaries, if not their parent corporation, profits off of the wars. Now, when I was protesting against George Bush out in front of his ranch, that was something different. That was something new. So the media covered it. But as soon as the media or the robber class, as I call them, which consists of the media, the military industrial complex, the government, Wall Street, the bankers, when they figured out that I actually, it was a movement building, not just one mother, one grieving mother wanting to ask George Bush a question, why? And when a movement started to build, that's when the spin doctors and the attack machines came after me to try and demonize me and my message. But even then, if we had a protest that had 600,000 people, the media would say we had 50,000 people. And then they go and instead of like looking at the families that come out to our protests, just people from mainstream, quote unquote, normal America who come out to our protests because they are against war, they're against occupation, they're against violence. Instead of the media focusing on those people, they'll find the most out of the mainstream person that they can find and play that person over and over and over again, or find somebody that has an extremist position, maybe even a racist position, and start giving that person a megaphone or a microphone, and to make our movement look like it's either crazy or racist or anti-American or whatever. So, Aaron, I know that if you only look at the corporate media or the mainstream media, you'll find very little, but independent media sites like antiwar.com, like the Information Clearinghouse, like my site, cindysheehansoapbox.blogspot.com. If you search out, there's so many, I can't name them all, but if you search out, if you spend a little more time than, you know, the few minutes it takes to turn on CNN or turn on MSNBC, it looks like you did try and Google, but, you know, try and find sites that tell the truth. So thank you very much for your question, Aaron.
Who are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed among your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you. And you, of tender years, can't know the fears that your elders grew by, and so please help them with your youth. They seek the truth before they can die. Teach your parents well, their children's hell will slowly go by. Them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
My name is Pam. I live in the Tenderloin District of San Francisco, and I have been a supporter of Cindy's since she announced she was going to run for Congress against Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi. I worked tirelessly on her campaign because I believe in Cindy, and I believe in the cause of peace and justice that she stands for. If you're listening to this show, then more than likely you support Cindy too. Please consider making a donation to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox airing on the web. It is important for me to be able to continue to hear the truth. In a world where truth and courage are in such short supply, Cindy fills that void. Please go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com and click on the donate link. That's www.cindysheehansoapbox.com.
Cindy Sheehan's new ebook, Myth America 2, further examines two distinct classes of people that clearly show that we are not all in this together, as President Obama has declared. The first group, the robber class, are wealthy victimizers such as those corporations and politicians that profit off the hard labor of others through economic theft and violent exploitation. The second group, the robbed class, are the victims such as those who work multiple jobs just to make ends meet, those who tragically send their children off to die in robber class wars, those who lack proper health care, those who are denied decent education, and those who lose jobs and homes due to robber class graft. The robber class controls our government, and as Cindy says, we, the robbed class, can only be robbed if we allow it. With pinpoint accuracy, humor, and in layperson's terms, Cindy Sheehan shows us why we should no longer be codependent with the robber class. To obtain a copy of Myth America 2, please visit CindySheehansSoapbox.com.
That was Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, our show for today. I'm very, very proud of it. I'm very proud of the show. I'm very pleased that my listeners support us financially. It costs about $700 a month to keep the Soapbox on the air. And every month we're miraculously able to keep the show going for another month. And I really appreciate that. CindySheehansoapbox.com. You can go to the donate link to help keep us on the air. I want to thank you, my listeners, more than anybody. This holiday season, I'm very thankful for you. I'm very thankful for your support. I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my associate producer, Mikey, Rational Radio 1360 AM, my guest, Ralph Nader. So please get out on the streets. We need you. This is Cindy Sheehan, and you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
And now, the Reverend Billy.
Welcome, children, to the Church of Stop Shopping. I'm Reverend Billy. I wish I could say to you, Merry Christmas, but as your pastor, I could not in good conscience ignore the Shopocalypse, which is upon us now. Children, if we don't back away from the dazzling products on this shelf in front of us, if we don't stop our hands from grabbing that plastic in the wallet. No, children, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will not get out my Visa, my MasterCard. They brought us this apocalypse. There's only one Christmas sale right now, and that's the one selling our souls 50% off. Children, there's still hope, there's still time. Together, we can march out of this doom damned super mall that we are trapped in. Walk toward that golden holiday before us. Children, let's put our hands on the computer now and say we're going to change Christmas this year. Change-a-lujah! 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 Amen!
I must make my witness. I have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.